Chapter 52. Reacher wrenched the car door open and tore the phone out of the guy's hand and hurled it high in the air, right over the roof of the bar. Then he grabbed the guy by the scruff of his sweater and hauled him out of his seat and half-dragged and half-ran him back the way he had come, 10 feet, 20, and then he spun him around like a discus thrower and launched him towards the back wall of the cocktail lounge. Then he sprinted back and jammed himself into the guy's seat and slammed the lever into gear and stamped on the gas. Gravel sprayed all over the place, and the car shot forward, and he stamped on the brake and more or less fell out the door and danced around the trunk of Goodman's car to the driver's door. He blipped the fob and tore the door open and started up and backed away from the back wall of the bar and swung the wheel hard. The sand-colored Crown Vic was still moving. He had left it in gear. He overtook it and turned tight around its hood, and its slow roll caught him with a soft low-speed impact, its front end against his rear quarter. He fishtailed free and drove on through the gap between the bar and the next establishment in line. He glanced left and saw the sandy-haired guy limping as fast as he could after something, either Goodman's car or his own, he wasn't sure. After that last glimpse, he looked away from the guy and focused forward and drove through the front lot and bounced over the camber of the main drag and squeezed through a gap into the back lots on the other side of the road. Then he slowed down and took a breath and got straightened up and edged forward until he was lined up with the next gap south and had a distant view of the motel and the diner together. No sign of Sorensen. No action at the diner. The blue Crown Vic was still parked, still quiet. No one was rushing towards it. The diner door stayed resolutely closed. There was no commotion visible through the windows. Reacher watched for a whole minute until he was convinced. The State Department guy had not been on the phone to the diner. So then he watched the motel, and 3 minutes later Sorensen's room door opened and she stepped out. She was in the same pantsuit with the new shirt under it. She had her old shirt balled up in the new shirt's wrapper. She was taking her laundry home. A different approach. Because she had a home. She stood for a second on the walkway outside her room, glancing left and right, head high, like a woman looking for a taxicab from a city sidewalk. Then she set off north towards the bar where he had said the car was parked. He turned the wheel and eased out through the gap and crunched through the front lot and bumped over the road again and swooped around and braked to a stop right next to her. He leaned over and opened her door, and she slid into her seat like it was a maneuver they'd rehearsed every day of their lives. He said, "I had to move. I had a little trouble with your Mr. Lester from the State Department." She said,
"Mr. Lester isn't mine."
Then he realized he had more trouble than he had thought. Far back in the mirror, he saw Dawson and Mitchell burst out the diner door and run out into the parking lot. Both had phones to their ears. Their free hands were pumping and their jackets were flapping open. So Lester had, in fact, called the diner. But not deliberately. Not directly. In a very circuitous way instead. Probably he had been on the line with his people in Foggy Bottom, and his shouted, "You're the person we're looking for," and the abrupt termination of the call had gotten some bright guy thinking, and that bright guy had immediately called the Hoover Building, and the Hoover Building had called Kansas City, and Kansas City had called Dawson and Mitchell on their cells, and were in fact probably still in the process of telling them, "The guy you're looking for is currently kicking Lester's ass about 20 yards from you." They saw him, or they saw Sorensen. They froze in place and pointed, and then ran for their car. Reacher hit the gas, and the sudden acceleration dumped Sorensen back in the passenger seat, and the car slewed and fishtailed over the gravel. Reacher fought the wheel and bumped down over the curb at an angle and took off north up the road. He craned his neck and watched in the mirror and saw the blue bureau car jam backward and turn and come after him. "Hold on," he said. "I'm a lousy driver."
"Now you tell me,"
Sorensen said. She scrabbled around and clipped her seat belt and pulled it tight around her. Reacher kept his foot down hard. A big V8, police spec, plenty of power and torque, not bad at all. Except that Dawson and Mitchell had the exact same car. Same V8, same spec, same power and torque. And maybe less weight, without the light bar on the roof and the push bars front and rear. Better aerodynamics, certainly. Reacher knew the interstate was 50 miles ahead, and he knew there wasn't much of anything else before that. There were some turns left and right, and there were some small stands of trees here and there, and there were occasional old wooden farm buildings standing all rotted and abandoned and unexplained in the fields. Apart from that, it was just winter dirt, and it was all very flat. No dips, no valleys, no hills, no ridges. Places to run. No place to hide. The road surface was bad, and the roadbed had been heaved up and down by years of winter frosts and summer droughts. Acceptable at normal speeds, but dangerous going fast. Goodman's cruiser was riding like a yacht on an ocean swell. The engine was howling, and the wheel was writhing in Reacher's hands. Dawson and Mitchell were maybe 400 yards back, but they were gaining. Reacher jammed his foot down harder, pedal to the metal, 100 miles an hour. Places to run, no place to hide. Puller, he thought. He said, "Do you know how to work the radio?" Sorensen said,
"I could try."
"Find out where Puller is with his radar gun. Tell him he's got a speeder heading north, a dark blue sedan." Reacher drove on. No steering involved. The road was dead straight. The car went weightless over dips and hollows. Never airborne, but not far from it. Sorensen took the microphone out of its clip and fiddled with switches. She cleared her throat and said,
"Deputy Puller, what is your location?"
Puller's voice came back over static. "Who is that?"
"This is Agent Sorensen with the FBI. Where are you now?"
"A mile shy of the county line, ma'am."
"North, south, east, or west?"
"North."
"Okay, good. You have a speeder coming north towards you, a dark blue Ford Crown Victoria. Please stop the driver and caution him against his reckless and unsafe behavior."
"Will do, ma'am."
"Out,"
Sorensen said. She hung up the microphone. She said,
"How do you stop a car doing 100 miles an hour? We'll probably get Puller killed."
"In which case we'll be helping the gene pool." Reacher hurtled onward. Dawson and Mitchell were now 300 yards back. About 6 seconds at 100 miles an hour. But they were still gaining. Reacher scanned far ahead. Straight road, flat dirt, low horizon. No sign of Puller. He asked, "Did your tech team call?"
Sorensen said, "Not yet. What's on your mind?"
"Motive," Reacher said. "Who snatches a dead woman's kid? Especially a kid who saw nothing and knows nothing."
"How can the autopsy answer that question?"
"It might not," Reacher said. "That's what's on my mind." His foot was hard on the boards. It was crushing the pedal. But the car was tapped out. It wouldn't go any faster. 100 was as good as it got. They passed a turn to the left. Another on the right. Paved, but not much more than tracks between fields.
"There,"
Sorensen said. Reacher saw a dot on the horizon. A tiny smudge, vaguely black and white and gold against the brown. Puller's cruiser, waiting on the shoulder, maybe a mile away. 36 seconds. No more turns before it. Far away to the right was a copse of trees. Far away to the left was an old barn, sway-backed and gray with age. 30 seconds. 20 seconds. "Hold tight," Reacher said. 15 seconds. He clamped the wheel tight in his hands and came off the gas and stamped on the brakes. The front end dipped radically, and he and Sorensen were thrown forward, and he fought to keep the car straight. Dawson and Mitchell didn't slow down. They kept on coming. Puller's car was 100 yards ahead, then 50, then 30. Then Reacher swung the wheel hard and drove off the road into the dirt on the right, and Dawson and Mitchell were launched ahead of him like a slingshot. Reacher hugged a tight bouncing circle in the dirt and saw Dawson and Mitchell passing Puller at about 70, and Puller lighting up his strobes and his siren and pulling out behind him. Reacher continued the circular turn and thumped back up on the road and headed south, fast, back the way he had come. All the way to the turn he had seen on the left, which was now on the right. He braked hard and took it and pattered over the lumpy surface and turned in on a rutted track and came to a dead stop behind the old swayback barn. He got out and ran to the far corner of the ramshackle structure and peered out north. Nothing in the distance. No sign of Dawson and Mitchell. Not yet. They were still out of sight, more than a mile to the north. He counted out time and space in his head. Right then they would be slowing, stopping, turning around, hassling with Puller, showing ID, arguing, yelling, getting frustrated, getting delayed. Then they would be coming back south as fast as they could. They would have seen his tight turn on the dirt, and they would be planning on chasing him all the way back to town. 3 minutes, he figured. Maybe 3 minutes and 10 seconds. He waited. And then he saw them, right on time, far away on the main drag, hustling left to right, north to south, doing about 100 again. An impressive sight. The big stately sedan was really picking up its skirts. Its paint was winking in the watery sun. It was planted firmly on the blacktop, squatting at the rear, straddling the center line. Reacher ran back past Goodman's car and peered out from the barn's other corner. He got a rear view of the blue Crown Vic blasting south. After 10 seconds, it was a tiny dot. After 20 seconds, it was gone altogether. He breathed out and walked back to the car. He got back in and closed the door. He sat slumped in the seat with his hands on his knees. Silence. Nothing but the faithful idle of the engine, and clicks and ticks as stressed components cooled back down. Sorensen said,
"You're not such a terrible driver."
He said, "Thank you."
"What now?"
"We wait."
"Where?"
"I guess this place is as good as any." She unzipped her black leather bag and took out Goodman's phone. She clipped it in its dashboard cradle. It chimed once to tell them it was charging. Then it started to ring. She leaned over and checked the window.
"My tech team,"
she said,